Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Saturday, the end of the week, 2 hours today, looking back at all the news. What a crazy, insane, weird week it has been. You know, you have to take a pause and just step back and look at all the stuff that is going on in the world right now and say, boy, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, somebody had said, at this point in 2009, you're going to be dealing with a government that has been torturing innocent people to death. You're going to be dealing with Israel totally subverting the U.S. government and the Congress and the presidency to their agenda, even to the point where young Americans are being sent to die in wars for Israel. And now the flu pandemic, you know, it's, oh, come on, it's not going to get that bad. You're just one of those weird conspiracy wacko type people. And, well, yeah, but I got to tell you, the biggest government conspiracy of all is the claim that there are no big government conspiracies. So we have that on a coffee mug around here. All right. If you want to join us on the air today, Matt is in the control room waiting to pounce on the telephone the instant you call in. The number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. We have got lots to talk about. And let's get the economy stuff out of the way and then move on to some stuff that's a little bit more pressing right now. Today is End the Fed Day at various Federal Reserve banks and offices around the country. There are protests out in front today. Monday, there's a coordinated call in to Congress saying it is time to, first of all, audit the Federal Reserve and possibly basically just get rid of it as being the root cause of the economic decline of the United States over the last 50 years. So, and I agree. It is time to go back to the monetary system that we had in the Constitution of the United States. That was that constitutional monetary system that created the superpower of the United States. And ever since the creation of the Federal Reserve, coming up on almost 100 years ago, another 4 years, it'll be the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve. And over that period, the wealth of the people has been transferred to the bankers. We are left destitute. The bankers are incredibly wealthy, and they're just trying to figure out a way to squeeze those last few pennies from our pockets before they run off laughing into their, what they imagine to be well-deserved retirements of wealth and privilege. Now, we have been commenting about the seeming lack of synchronicity between the stock market surge of the last several weeks and the continuing economic news, which is trending downwards. And we couldn't figure out what was going on. Now we're beginning to get an insight what's going on. It is a bump and dump. What do I mean by a bump and dump? Okay, you've probably seen these emails that come into your home that said, oh, this is a stock on fire, and you don't know who it's from. It either purports to be from some close friend or a brokerage that for some reason has you on their email list, and they come in and say, oh, this stock is going up, and it'll give you some numbers for the last few days about how the stock is climbing. And the goal of this is to lure people into buying the stock, which drive the price up even further, and then the operators of this scheme will wait until the price peaks, and then they unload all the stock they have in the company and make a huge killing. The stock price plummets, and everybody who got suckered in on the bump and dump, they lose their money. They get burned. It's called a bump and dump. It is a very, very common stock fraud that goes on all the time. It's being carried on the emails, on emails and various other scams like that. Now, what seems to be happening is certain stocks have been driven up, the indicator issues for the Dow, and the Dow keeps getting pushed up. And we're finding out now that executives and insiders at major U.S. corporations are now selling off their own shares, their founders' issues, their stock options. They're unloading the stock during this surge. So it looks like what happened is everybody said, you know, the economy really isn't improving, but let's throw some money into the stock market to drive it up, and we'll get the day traders and suckers to come in. Will get the media to say, look, the stock market's going up and everything's okay, and people will buy back into the stock market, and then we'll dump our shares, and we'll make a real killing, and we'll have our retirement nest egg all put together. And that seems to be what's happening. And it's a supposition, but the fact is that we are seeing a lot of insider trading in the sense of the cream, but insider selling. people, executives, insiders at the corporations, they're unloading their own stock right now while the market is still somewhat up. And I think that's a very, very bad sign. Now, certainly, the data coming in from the housing market confirms it is still trending downward. We're seeing foreclosures increasing. Prices are going down. We know that large numbers of foreclosed homes are being kept off the market in order to try and keep the prices from falling any further. But they're going down. So the bottom line is all this crap, and that is the word, that we're getting from the corporate media about green shoots and glimmers of hope and light in the tunnel and all these other little euphemisms out there to just make you believe, make you want to believe that things are going to get better and that you should go out and do whatever it is they're trying to talk you into doing. It is all nonsense. It is still going down, and there is no turnaround, and there is no bottom, and it's, you know, it's just a lot of claptrap to try and get the last little bit of money out of the general population possible before it all falls apart. We have a T-shirt and a coffee mug around our store that we've been selling for years now. I mean, all of a sudden, it's a popular item. And everybody says, boy, you must have rushed to get that one made. And I said, no, we've had it on the store for like, five, 6 years now. And it goes, the last official act of any government is to loot the nation. I think that's where we are. Because we're not seeing anything coming out of the Obama administration or the government or Wall Street that's consistent with turning the economy around. We're not seeing the high-paying jobs come back for our workers. We're not seeing anything like that. We're just seeing continual looting of the public treasury to shower on the very people who created this mess. So it is really, really a huge fiasco there. Oh, we've got a caller. We're going to go to Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind this morning?
Yes, it was just about stocks like you're talking about. First question is, do you think there's any gold in Fort Knox? And second question is, I heard that gold that is traded on the stock market is not really gold, it's just paper, and that's why, in the Great Depression, people went to gold, but that's why people ain't going to gold right now. And I just wanted your opinions on that, and I'll hang up.
Okay, well, basically the idea is there is some gold in Fort Knox. The United States always has to maintain a certain amount of gold because the reality is that in transactions between countries and in transactions among banks, they still deal in gold. They don't want to bother with this paper fiat currency that the us peones are supposed to be using. They want to deal in gold. The Federal Reserve...
But it's never been audited.
No, it has never been audited. And the same thing with the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve banks have gold reserves as well, probably quite a bit larger than those of the United States government. But even if there is gold in Fort Knox, it may already be, as they say, allocated, because originally that gold was the collateral on government borrowing. And back during the Nixon administration, the government went deeper into debt than they had gold to cover as the collateral. And so if there is any gold in Fort Knox, it's already kind of spoken for. It can't be taken out and used for anything because it's already obligated. It's pledged as collateral on government loans, along with huge amounts of public lands here in the United States. The fiscal situation of the U.S. government is really much, much worse than they're letting on. Now, as far as the COMEX gold is what you're talking about, the COMEX gold trading is being done with paper. Somewhere down the road, it is supposed to resolve and everything gets rushed through. And at the end, there's supposed to be some real gold on the line there. But the reality is that it's a very thin and tenuous trade. And, yeah, a lot of the COMEX trades are being done purely on paper, and it's sort of an artificially created equity that you're dealing in this valuation. It's a promissory note. It's like a gold future. So somewhere down the line, you're supposed to be able to swap all this paperwork for the real gold, but it's seldom done, and the reality is that it's just being traded as paper, as you said before. The real issue that we have right now is that the central banks are continuing to dump gold on the market to keep gold prices down because they don't want you to leave that stock market yet, because that'll cause a crash. And that's the reason gold prices tend to not be rising as fast as most people would expect at this point. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And Rick, my apologies. I did want you to stay on into this segment here to basically just finish up on this issue of gold and silver. And I know a lot of people are rushing to basically diversify into some of these precious metals. And a lot of people are wondering why the gold prices aren't behaving the way you would expect them to. And I did want to follow up with the fact that back during the Great Depression, a lot of people wanted to use gold. They didn't trust the paper anymore that was coming out of the Federal Reserve. And at that time, we had two overlapping money systems. We had the Federal Reserve notes that had just been introduced, but the original silver certificates and gold and silver coinage were still in common usage in the United States. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt, as part of a program to sort of force a transition into using only the Federal Reserve notes, engaged in gold confiscation, and anybody with gold coins were forced to turn them in for paper note money. You were allowed to keep your gold jewelry, and even today there's a lot of people who invest in gold jewelry. And you need to be aware that when you're talking about gold jewelry as an investment, stay away from that 10-carat stuff. Most of it is not even really 10-carat gold anyway. There's a lot of fraud out there. There are literally jewelry stores that produce investment gold jewelry, which is 24 carat, and it doesn't look like it's all that impressive. You know, it's just stamped out in units of weight and chain and everything. But the point of it is that it is legal to own in places where gold coinage is under confiscation. And so you might want to think about that. And, of course, if you're investing in gold jewelry, there's a certain additional dividend that comes from the wife when you show it to her and let her wear it and so forth and so on. But the serious situation is having some gold and silver on hand. And I'm not saying dump all of your investments and go totally into gold and silver. You've got to save money for canned foods and shotguns as well. But having a little bit of gold and silver is always good in a barter situation, and more to the point, bribing your way through security checkpoints. So it's always good to have some of that on hand. And, of course, in my economic circumstances, I don't have any gold or silver. I tend to be buying lead these days. And canned foods. Now, I think the bottom line, just to sum up that whole financial situation thing, we're seeing a lot of manipulation. We're seeing the financial reports being manipulated. We're seeing prices being manipulated, always to the advantage of the people who've got the money. And so you need to be very, very careful. And ultimately, in the long term, gold is something that is worth having some of, because the price is going to go up. It is being artificially depressed now, and maybe that's a good thing, because while they're trying to hold the price down by dumping gold on the market, that's the time to be buying and stocking up and putting it in your cookie jar or wherever it is you keep the things that you value most in your home. So, I buying gold is definitely a good idea. It's always a good place to save your money. It won't grow, but it's a hedge against the inflation and deflate. Well, the drop in the value of the dollar that we're seeing here. And it's inevitable now. It's inevitable. We're on that final roller coaster ride here. And everybody's heading for the lifeboats. And it's just like the Titanic. The rich and privileged are going to get the best lifeboats, and everybody else is going to be locked down in steerage to go down with the ship. And that just happens to be human nature. Of the sort of people who become rich in our society. They didn't become rich by being nice people, for the most part. I know very few really nice rich people. Those that are sort of became rich kind of by accident or inheritance. But I think by and large, and certainly Bernie Madoff is a good illustration of that. You know, people who've got that kind of money, they're not very nice. They'll seem nice, but they really aren't. So anyway, now moving along, and by the way, if you were listening on the last commercial break, there was that wonderful commercial for the the Fed and then the protest today and the phone call in on Monday, and definitely you need to get involved. And I know it was kind of pulled together a little short notice, certainly a lot less preparation than we had for those wonderful tea parties a week ago, but definitely get involved. And the reason is really very, very simple. Probably a lot of you have already heard about Megaphone. And that is this software system that the supporters of Israel use, and it's on their computers, and they're constantly sending messages to each other about, oh, there's an article here that's critical of Israel. We've got to pile on and shout them down and scream at the editor to never let this person write again. And they're very well organized, and they're not shy about standing out there and screaming, you're a filthy anti-Semite, and you're this, and you're that, just to try and scream down the opposition. And this is a time when we, the American people, who want our government to put America first, second, and third, we've got to be just as noisy. We've got to be just as well organized. We have got to be just as bold to stand up there and say, no more wars for Israel. No more of our tax dollars to Israel. We need our country back. And certainly, looking at the Federal Reserve issue, it has definitely been a major part of the downfall of the United States of America, because for the first 100 years of the country's life, more than 100 years, we had a sound monetary system, and it turned the United States into a world leader, highest standard of living for the American people, and it was working, and there was no reason to change it except that a bunch of really greedy people, bankers and politicians, said, you know, if we change this around to this other system, we'll get even richer and we won't have to do anything for it. And that was the reason the creature from Jekyll Island was created and forced on us. It was the third time they tried to do it. The first two times failed. We had presidents who had the courage to say, no, this is not working for the people, and I'm revoking your charter. So the third time they put it through as an act of Congress so that no president would have the ability to simply arbitrarily shut it down. And it is a system that is designed to transfer wealth, real wealth, from the people to the bankers. They're holding all the mortgages on all your homes. You've got all this pretty paper they've printed up to make it feel like you've gotten something for all of your labor, but you don't. You got a bunch of pretty paper, and that's pretty much it. The actual title to the United States of America is in the hands of the bankers, both foreign and domestic, and that was the intent of the system. The fatal flaw in the design of the Federal Reserve, as we've mentioned many, many times before, is that the instant a debt-based economy goes into operation, more money is owed to the central bank than is actually in existence. And that means a debt-based economy is by nature a predatory economy. It must always be finding larger and larger groups of borrowers in order to justify the creation of more money. That's why they always talk about an expanding economy. Ideally, an economy should expand exactly in pace with the population, because the money is just circulating among that population, and their productivity should lead to wealth. Work precedes capital. Unfortunately, under the Federal Reserve banking system, and this is an attitude that has just infected our entire society from top to bottom, is making products to make money is no longer the primary business of our nation. We've made money the product. Repackaging it, reloaning it, bundling it, reshaping it, putting new paper products around it, putting little pretty ribbons on it, and, you know, nice controlled disco lighting on it to make it look more and more attractive. And we sell money around the world. All right, we're going to take a break here. Join us on the air at 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the Mexico flu and the latest developments on that issue. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And before we get onto the Mexican flu, and we've got a caller waiting on the line, and John, we're going to get to you in a minute, but I wanted to finish up a postscript on the economy. I'm reading some of the stuff that's going on in our little chat room at whatreallyhappened.com, and they're talking about the involvement in the Federal Reserve at this level, and, you know, the contractor has to borrow money from the bank to build the house, and then the homeowner has to borrow money from the bank to buy the house. And it underscored something, a point I really wanted to make here. The biggest difference between the Federal Reserve and what we had before, prior to the establishment of the Federal Reserve Bank, when the money was actually owned by the government and put in circulation, large amounts of commerce took place that didn't involve banks. Because the money wasn't owned by the bank. I'd go to the hardware store, I'd buy pipe and lumber and whatever, and I'd just hand over silver and gold dollars, and I'd go do whatever I was going to do with it. And then that hardware store would take that silver and gold, and he'd go to his supplier, and he'd get the supplies from that guy to put on the shelf, and then the supplier would pay his employees and his manufacturers, and that was how commerce was going on. And huge portions of it existed completely outside and independent of the bankers. They had nothing to say about it. They had nothing to do with it. Under the Federal Reserve System, because all the currency is a loan, then there is no transaction in the United States that does not in some way or other include the bank in on the process. I mean, today, it's if you own a store and you're putting stock on your shelves, you do that with a loan or a credit line on which interest is paid. And people come in and they're paying with these Federal Reserve notes that are the proceeds of a loan. And if you really think about it, the primary end result of the creation and enforcement of the Federal Reserve note as the legal tender of this country is the banks are getting a piece of the action of everything that is done in this country. It's like the mafia. We get a piece of the action. Whatever you do, donuts in the morning, we get a piece of the donuts. And that is the biggest difference. And that is why, ultimately, the whole purpose of the Federal Reserve was to draw wealth from the American people and give it to the bankers. Those of you with a home mortgage that you're still making the payments on, take out a calculator sometime and look at the original purchase price of the home and then look at how much you're actually going to pay to the bank over the course of that mortgage in order to quote-unquote own that home. And you don't really own it because the government can come in with eminent domain and turn it into a golf course if somebody comes along and says, you know, I can make more money off that land than that stupid private home. And you will find out that over the course of that mortgage, you will pay five times the value of that home to the bank. The bank didn't build the home. Yeah, they loaned the money to the contractor to build the home, but the contractors had to pay them back with interest. So the bank is just making tons and tons of money off of the work and labor of the American people, instead of allowing us to do business with each other directly. That was the single biggest change to our society, brought about by the Federal Reserve. And it's time for it to stop. We need to go back to what worked, to what the Founding Fathers knew would work. We need to abandon the financial system that Woodrow Wilson, the president who signed the Federal Reserve Act, admitted in his memoirs was going to destroy the country. It's time for the corruption to go away. All right, we're going to go to the phones. John in Austin, aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind this morning?
Yeah, aloha. How are you doing out there?
I'm doing just fine. What can we do for you this morning?
I had a question I wanted to ask you. I lived in Hawaii back in 76, long time ago, for about a year. I was in high school. And anyway, I always, in hindsight, there was always a strong undercurrent of independence amongst the Hawaiians there.
Yes.
With what's going on and the way the feds are cracking down and the draconian enforcement of laws and surveillance and everything like that, how is that playing in Hawaii? How is that, because Hawaii is a unique, in my mind, a unique situation, given its physical distance from the mainland and also being, if you will, a hub between the Pacific Rim and the mainland. And so, like, you were getting ready to segue into the swine flu and the bird, you know, the different flus. You guys are really at a target because, like, things coming over from Asia and the Pacific Rim and stuff coming in from the mainland and the high amount of tourism. am I making my...
No, you're making perfect sense. The reason I'm laughing is because right now our tourism is at absolute crisis levels. Nobody wants to come to Hawaii anymore because the TSA at the airport is constantly fondling your wives and daughters, and they're confiscating your Swiss Army knives, and they're dropping your laptops and everything, and our tourism is just terrible, and our economy is suffering for it, as a result. Now, we have the highest per capita percentage of military bases of any state in the Union. In fact, 25% of our population is linked to the U.S. military one way or the other. So there are a huge, huge presence here. And our location commanding the Pacific is always cited as the justification for the U.S. To basically keep such control over the island and take such vast amounts of land. I mean, if you look at Hawaii through Google Earth, and take a close look at all the military bases, they all have their own private golf courses. Man, they're living the life of Riley out here. As far as the native Hawaiians are concerned, there's a strong undercurrent of independence because the local Hawaiians understand fully that the annexation of Hawaii by the United States was illegal. This was actually admitted to during the Clinton administration. He signed this public apology law saying, yeah, we were wrong to take your country away from you. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court has just come back and said, but we're going to keep it. And so this is definitely a bone of contention in which the Hawaiian people know the U.S. government acted wrongly. The government has admitted they acted wrongly, but they basically come out and effectively said, tough noogies. And we're not going to do anything about it, and you don't get your land back, and you don't get any money for it. We'll start treating you like the Native Americans, and we'll acknowledge you are an indigenous people, and that's supposed to make up for all that has been done to them. And so there is a tremendous spirit of independence. We've got, of course, despite the claims made in the Jerusalem Post, we have a page dedicated to Hawaii not actually legally being a state at whatreallyhappened.com. And only yesterday I put up this wonderful documentary by, I think it was by Press TV. It was basically, if you go back to yesterday's page, it's this wonderful documentary about the indigenous people and the struggle for sovereignty and recognition of their sovereignty. And actually, I did link it also to the bottom of the Hawaii page. So go to whatreallyhappened.com, and in the little bar of tiny menu links up near the top, you'll see one that says Hawaii. Click on that, and it will take you to that.
Can I give you one other thing, too? Change gears here for a second, but segueing into the flu business. I was a member of a search and rescue organization here in Texas, and I was the liaison at the Emergency Management Center here in Austin, where I live, and would go and once a month meet with all the other volunteer organizations in the command room at the Emergency Management Center. And this would, there would be like United Way and this and that, and all the big boys were there, the volunteer organizations. And one of the hot top, and this was in 2005, Michael, they were talking bird flu. And I'm sitting back here, and of course, you know, I kind of stated the obvious. I'm like, we're going to dedicate all this discussion and resources for something that's only killed maybe 150 people worldwide when we have hurricanes that bear down on our coast every year?
Well, you have a very important insight there. And, John, I'm going to ask you to stick through the commercial break because I definitely want to talk about what you just mentioned, okay? So we're going to take a stop here for some commercials. Phone lines are still loading up. Number is 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room answering the phones, and we will be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
Hey. And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're still talking with John in Austin, Texas here. And we're talking about the swine flu. And John was telling us how he was involved with search and rescue and emergency services back in Texas back in 2005. And he was hearing back then people were preparing for this flu pandemic. And it's not unusual because, as I was pointing out yesterday, and there are still links at whatreallyhappened.com to the supporting documentation, we were being propagandized about this coming flu pandemic back in 2004 and back in 2005. There were articles in National Geographic about how terrible it was going to be and bird flu was going to wipe us all out and we better get ready for this huge reduction, just drastic population reduction. And it didn't happen because bird flu in the wild has a very low secondary communicability, which means if you have got the bird flu, it's actually very difficult for you to give it to other people. Because it's just not that infectious going from human to human. And so we were getting all these horror stories about all these people who were dying from bird flu, but it really wasn't a large number. And it never became this huge explosive pandemic. And then we find out in 2005 and 2006, scientists are intentionally creating hybrids between the very deadly hemorrhagic bird flu and the highly infectious swine flu. And they're creating these in the laboratories. And they're saying, oh, why are you doing this? Well, we've got to protect against terrorists who might use this. And, you know, like these camel herders in the caves of Afghanistan have got this kind of level 4 biocontainment facility set up to do this kind of stuff. But the bottom line here is we were being propagandized. There was going to be this flu pandemic back then. So obviously all the government agencies and everything were saying, yes, we're all getting ready for this thing. And frankly, it reminds me very much about how FEMA was in New York the night before 9/11 for a drill to be prepared for the pandemic. We know that Mexico had a military drill for control of a pandemic only a few months ago, last year. And so it's like everybody has sort of known, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, that this thing was coming along. And so your story is absolutely consistent with this idea that this thing has been rather suspiciously anticipated for several years now.
Yeah, Michael, and the situation there, I mean, like I said, you had all the major nonprofits there, as I had mentioned, like United Way, Salvation Army, state resources, and this facility was a brand new facility. It was at the old Austin Airport and was state of the art. It had all the TV monitors up along the top that went to closed circuit TV all over the city, command centers and seating and computers for every agency. This would have been the nerve center in the event of a disaster,
mm-hmm.
not only for the Austin area, but for the state. Okay. This would have been the nerve center. And, it's a fortress. They have big steel gates and you check in and check out, and it's a highly secure facility.
I'm familiar with those. In fact, let me share a quick little story here. And Thomas, we are going to get to you in a few minutes on the phone. I know you're calling from Sweden. I'm going to get to you really, really quick here, but I want to get this one story. One of the reasons I began to understand something was going on that we were not being told, is I used to live in Los Angeles. In fact, my wife and I were living in North Hollywood, when we met and when we got married and all those wonderful times. But in between all that fun stuff, we noticed a lot of construction going in to Griffith Park. And, we went through the Northridge earthquake, and FEMA came in, and there was supposedly all these hundreds of millions of dollars for aid to the earthquake victims. I never saw any of it. We lost about half of everything we had in the Northridge earthquake. We didn't know anybody who actually got anything from FEMA. And then we found out afterwards through some friends of ours who work in construction and contracting that all of that money supposedly to help the earthquake victims in the Northridge quake had actually been used to build a new underground command post under the northeast corner of Griffith Park. And, you know, we used to go up there all the time hiking, and we saw all this weird construction going on and all this underground stuff going in. And we used to see these huge military helicopters flying along the ridgeline there out from the Pacific Ocean. They'd come in and they'd just sort of settle down into this valley. And it was just going on constantly. We've come to find out FEMA has built all of these huge command posts all over the country. They're underground. We've got one up here in the middle of the H3 as it goes through the Ko'olau Mountains. There's one underneath the new Denver airport. It's why they're having all these subsidence problems that's cracking the airport building and everything. There's one outside Seattle. There's one basically near every major city. And they've been preparing for something big for quite some time now. And at first we thought maybe they're getting ready to actually try and fight and win a nuclear war. It may very well be that they're building these little arcs to sort of save the selected people, in the event of a pandemic. And who knows what all else, but we do know that these preparations have been ongoing now for about 20 years.
Now, riddle me this. You know, there was a story out that a couple of vials, I guess, or samples of highly contagious flu went missing from, is it Fort Detrick?
Yes, Fort Detrick, you sambered. We're going to be talking about that.
Right.
It's obvious now
but
that I'm going to have to push the Mexico thing into the next hour, but go ahead.
And Fort Detrick, and then all of a sudden, there are all these kids that got sick at a school in New Jersey, and they're talking about swine flu.
Okay, well, those kids, it's New York, not New Jersey, and those kids had just come back from Mexico.
Yeah, isn't it funny how everything all of a sudden is tying up if you start playing connect the dots?
Well, we're going to connect those dots in the next hour, but,
okay,
John, I really have to let you go because... Because Thomas, Thomas is calling all the way from Sweden, and we need to get him on the air, okay?
Let's do it.
All right, John, thanks an awful lot for understanding, and we're going to switch to Thomas in Sweden. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome to the show. Sorry to keep you on the line for so long.
No problem. John had a lot of important things to say. Thank you, John. Good morning and aloha. I was going to talk about the economy, but I just got a message here from my government here in Sweden. It says 70 have died in Mexico, and that the young, healthy people, this is the problem. One's immune defense works against you in this swine flu thing, and you die from hemorrhagic fever, from bleeding in your lungs. But here the recommendation is, that, and I have to add, I'm a deputy chief of rescue here, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is no vaccinations. Don't go for a vaccination. That's what my government is telling me now. That's all I can give you on this, all right?
Okay, well, I appreciate that information. I'm hearing that Mexico City deaths are already up above 80 now. Now that it's becoming aware, I think there are still people out there. This appears to have a 7-day incubation period. So we don't know really how many people have it. There are probably people, we can slow the infection rates down. They've canceled all public events. I know they canceled a big concert that was scheduled for last night at the stadium down there. They're closing all the museums and theaters and libraries and all of these other public places. A lot of businesses have voluntarily shut down and told their employees, stay home, you'll get your paycheck, do not come into the office, do as much work from home as you can. And so they're taking this very, very seriously down there. The problem is what you're talking about, this age range where they're saying it's mostly 25 to 45-year-old people who are being cut down by this. It is very interesting because this is the exact same demographics we saw with the 1918 Spanish flu when that came out. So, and as we reported yesterday, there have been genetic studies that show that what they're calling the bird flu now is very, very similar to the 1918 so-called Spanish flu virus, which we know they went out digging up victims to start recreating that 1918 flu virus a few years ago. So there's a chain of these very strange research projects going on that seem to raise a serious possibility that this could be a deliberately manufactured virus. It could be a horrible lab accident. Somebody may have dropped a beaker. We're hearing a report from Wayne Madsen now that his sources are claiming that the virus does show traces of deliberate weaponization. Now, I'm a little hesitant to go there, but Wayne Madsen, normally, his stuff is pretty much bang spot on, and so we have to pay attention to this. But as we pointed out yesterday with this whole chain of evidence, and I'm going to put it together into its own standalone article here after the show today, but there are some serious questions there about, just what's going on down there. The problem is we are living in the modern jet age, and we know this thing has at least been in Mexico for a week in order to have the people who are sick right now. And that means it's had 7 days to travel to the rest of the world on jet planes. And like we said, the kids in New York who are sick, they just got back from Mexico. Thomas, thank you very much for the phone call. We got to let you go and stop for commercials and a news break. When we come back in hour number two, more about the Mexican flu and what you should be doing to keep yourself safe. Aloha, America. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our radio show today. And we're going to get into the situation with the Mexican flu a little bit more in depth. And the latest news that we're getting out of Mexico, and there are a couple of venues going on there. There's CDC is not reporting anybody as ill or dead of the flu until CDC's own labs do a confirmation. It's a very conservative position. So if you go to the CDC's website, you're seeing very small numbers of this so far. But they're concerned, so is the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization has apparently formally notified all of the major urban centers of the world to just be looking out for this thing, because it appears to have a 7-day incubation period, which means that for 6 days before the first signs of the flu actually appeared, anybody on an airplane from Mexico City to any place else in the world might have been carrying the flu. We know that in the case of the 75 students up in New York who appear to have a similar disease, they just got back from Mexico. We're waiting on confirmation that it is the same virus. But a lot of people are very, very concerned. There are a lot of Twitter users in Mexico City who are sending information out over Twitter right now. So that's one venue. Shortwave broadcasts are another, trying to get information from as close to the original source as possible. Now, the government of Mexico and Mexico City, that whole county area, all public events are canceled for the next 10 days. This includes sporting events, concerts. They were going to have a big concert at the stadium there. They're canceled for the next 10 days. Schools are closed. Libraries are closed. Museums are closed. Theaters are closed. A lot of businesses have voluntarily shut their doors. They've sent their employees home and said, stay home, do as much as you can from home. You know, you're going to get your paychecks anyway, but don't come in to work. Now, at this time, we are being told that this virus does not transmit easily by air, that the primary vector is skin-to-skin contact. So they're saying basically if you're worried about the swine flu and there are people around you who appear to be ill, just keep your hands washed. Don't shake hands. Don't kiss. Don't hug. And just keep a distance. And that air barrier, at least for now, they think that air barrier is your best protection. So, basic simple hygiene is going to do it. Now, coming out of the natural health area, there is a lot of anecdotal evidence that cinnamon has an antiviral component. And by that, I don't mean cinnamon flavor. I mean the real cinnamon, the ground-up bark of the cinnamon tree. So if you're big on cinnamon toast, you may want to have some of that for your breakfast over the next few days. That may help. There are a lot of things out there that are not going to work. Colloidal silver is good for a lot of things. It's not good against viruses. And you need to understand, because of the way viruses work, a lot of things that are effective against bacteria don't really work against the virus, because it's operating at a completely different level. So, you know, keep things clean and isolated. And if you're getting hit in your area, we may see the same thing in cities in the United States that we're already seeing in Mexico City, where you're encouraged to basically stay at home. So if you don't already have a couple of weeks' supply of food sitting in the larder, you might want to think about just, don't be a panic about it. Don't go crazy, but just put a few things aside, some dry goods, stuff that, that you can live on for a couple of weeks if you have to kind of hunker down for a while. It's just common sense. For those of you in Los Angeles, it's your earthquake kit. For those of you in Florida, it's your hurricane kit. It's something that you should have anyway as a normal course of dealing with natural disasters, which at least at this time, this appears to be one. So as we said before, they're talking about, these school kids just got back from Mexico, may have the same flu. And air travel, of course, is what may make this much more of a concern than the last swine flu outbreak or the original 1918 Spanish flu outbreak, which was misnamed, I have to add that. Now, there are a couple of very odd things about this sudden outbreak, because Mexico, like everybody else, they have a flu season. There is a time when these things emerge and tend to go away. And normally, Mexico's flu season is usually over by now. It's not supposed, you know, this is not the time of year when these flus come to Mexico. So that's another one of the atypical aspects of this case here. Now, there are some aspects about this story which are really kind of weird. As one of our callers was mentioning last hour, Fort Detrick, the USAMRID, the biomedical lab where they cook up really nasty things, had some samples go missing. And we don't know all of the samples that are missing. We know that some of them were really nasty. It's been admitted that at least one of the vials that went missing was, and I'm not kidding you, Venezuelan equine encephalitis. Now, I'm going to bet you 5 whole cents right here and right now that when they finally get down to what it was that killed all those Venezuelan polo ponies down in Miami a week ago, they're going to say they succumbed to Venezuelan equine encephalitis. Talk about dirty tricks and somebody being really spiteful and not wanting Venezuela to win that championship. The timing, as they say, is just too cute. Now, Fort Detrick has come out today insisting that all of these missing deceased samples were likely destroyed. They're not saying they were destroyed. They're admitting they don't know where they went. They're just saying they were likely destroyed because, heh, piffles, where else would they have gone to? And yet it was Fort Detrick, which was the source of the anthrax used in the anthrax letters right after 9/11. So we know some really lethal pathogens go walkabout from Fort Detrick and turn up being used for some very nefarious purposes. So we want to be very, very careful. Like I said, we've got this report coming in from Wayne Madsen that his sources are saying that the virus shows signs of intentional engineering. And so we need to be very, very careful about this. And, of course, Thomas from Sweden says that the official recommendation from the Swedish government to their population is not to wash hands. I'm reading the wrong place in the notes. Not to accept vaccination because the vaccination may cause much more harm than good. If this is really a new variety they're not prepared for, then there are no vaccines ready for it. The way the flu vaccine process works is they take an educated guess. It's a guess. They take a guess what flu is going to emerge next, and then they manufacture and sell vaccine for that. But they have to start that process almost a year in advance. And this is why occasionally we'll have vaccines that really aren't effective against the current flu mutation that's making the rounds. Certainly if we go by the official word that this is an unexpected merger of the swine and avian and human viruses, which we have reason to doubt that that's true, but if we take them at face value, then they really can't be a vaccine prepared for this particular virus because they haven't had enough lead time. And if all of a sudden they come up with a vaccine, they say, yes, this will protect you and you must take it, I would be very hesitant. Either they're fibbing about it and they're just rolling the dice, or they really have known that this virus was coming for far longer than they're letting on here. All right, well, we're going to keep watch on it right now. Last word, death count in Mexico City is above 80. Over 1,000 people known to be infected with a 7-day incubation period, and then basically moving to limit public-to-public contact only yesterday. I think it's going to get a lot worse in Mexico City before it gets any better. And again, the reality is in this age of jet travel around the world, even with the declining economy, the reality is that there is probably somebody carrying this virus in pretty much any major urban center with direct airplane flights to Mexico City, which is most of them, unfortunately. So that's about all we can say on that subject. Let's move on. I got some emails over the break saying, you know, this flu virus is just a distraction from the torture documents. And no, it isn't, because we're going to talk about that right now. Interestingly enough, the corporate media is still trying to sell this idea that torture is really good for America and necessary. And I saw Pat Robertson on MSNBC earlier today. The man is shameless in trying to push this on the American people. We're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. And you gotta have proof. Just track yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And I'm watching the little chat room that we have running at whatreallyhappened.com, and people are obviously very concerned about the potential of this flu down in Mexico from spreading. And we'll come back and talk about that a little bit more before the close of the show. But we're talking right now about things that you can do to basically be prepared for it. Dilute bleach solutions will kill the virus on countertops. So if somebody comes into your home who's acting like they're ill, you know, you can just wipe things down. Ultraviolet lights destroy viruses. So all of you hippies out there with your blacklight posters and stuff, you're okay. And which is actually kind of good because, you know, that's the age group that seems to mostly be feeling the effect of this. And it is kind of an irony that the healthiest part of our society are the ones most likely to be killed by this thing because their body's own immune systems turn on them. And, again, this is what made the Spanish flu so lethal back in 1918. And we should stop calling it the Spanish flu because it didn't come from Spain. It came from a U.S. military base, and that is just the absolute historical reality. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Chris in Florida. Chris, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Is Chris in Florida there? I'm not hearing Chris.
Oh, now you broke in. Okay. This is Chris. Yeah, hi. I really think it's important to, like, you're bringing up remedies and ways to protect yourself from the need for any troops, whether they be national troops or NATO troops, to come and take good care of us. Things like a couple of supplements, I think, or therapies someone might want to consider. Having read a couple books on colostrum, it's a very good immune modulator. It's good for hemorrhagic fever, according to many clinical studies,
okay.
Most of which are foreign. It is not vegan, but vegans should just get over it just this one time and have it on hand because the cows that they get it from produce an excess of their colostrum for their young, so they don't need nearly as much as they produce. So there's, don't worry about depriving the poor little calves. And another supplement is ozone or magnesium peroxide therapies or products. My favorite one is called Homozone. It's been around since the early 1900s. It forms oxygen in your system. And if this fever going around, if this virus is a lipid envelope virus, meaning it has a coating of fat to attach itself to our cells, as are 99% of the harmful viri, then ozone or magnesium peroxide will knock it out and not kill that lipid envelope so it won't be able to attach to your cells. And you mentioned UV light. That's one way to create ozone. The other being an electrical arc that ionizes the oxygen or the O2 and turns it into O3 or O4 or above. And it's really good to have an ozone-rich environment. I have a little personal battery-powered ozone generator I bought from the Power Hour or the powermall.com if you want to check it out.
I'm digging my old Tesla coil out of the garage.
It makes my hair stand on end.
Well, but, you know, my wife's not going to be able to complain about it now. You know, back off, honey. I'm saving us from the virus. You know, just, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, of course, about that. Listen, would you do me a favor, Chris? Would you email me all those supplement recommendations? Because I am going to put together a special page on the Mexican flu with all of this information about all the research that was done on these recombinant hybrid viruses. And I do want to include this these recommendations about cinnamon and bleach and UV light. And my wife, of course, really is an expert on these supplements and vitamins, and I'll have her take a look at the list and see what she can add to it as well. And, in fact, we might have her on the show this week. If this thing really does start to go out of control, we're going to have to put a focus on how people can take care of themselves without going to the vaccine route, just things they can do from stuff they buy at the store to just take care of themselves and deal with this whole thing.
Yes, and I was also reading that fulvic acid is good for the hemorrhagic fever. It's also good, I've been reading, for detoxifying from the heavy metals, as is humic acid and organic zeolite. So there's the fulvic acid seems to be one. But speaking of natural, there's perhaps a golden seal or garlic. The allicin is the active constituent in garlic, or oregano oil. Essential oils like oregano oil or lemongrass oil will usually knock out most of these viri. So, yeah, those are just some of the things that come to mind. If I'm not a doctor, but I play one on the radio, I guess. Just wanted to call in. But, you know,
I played one in the movies once.
Oh, good. You taught me there.
Well, listen, you know, my mother would be so proud. She wanted me to be a doctor, and I wound up instead working in the movie industry. But I did play a doctor in the film Alligator. So, all right. Well, listen, Chris, really, please jot that down and email it to me. I wasn't able to copy it all down as you were describing it to me, and I want to make sure I'm absolutely correct on that. But we are going to put up a page on this at whatreallyhappened.com, and I want to include as many of these common sense things to basically just, you know, take care of yourself and just being precautious. I don't think we're at the stage where we need to hit the panic button just yet. But there are reasons to be concerned, and let's, you know, better to be prepared than not, is what I can say. Okay?
Yeah, sure thing. These are all natural things, more powerful and more sure and guaranteed, according to the clinical studies, than most of the more powerful antibiotics even. But, yeah, Cipro, I heard that they said was one of the things that you have to be on at the time in order to prevent yourself from getting the coming down with the bird flu.
Yeah. You have to do them ahead of time. You know, once you've got the bird flu, they don't work, because by then the flu is already inside your cells. And these methods that you're talking about have to be present in the bloodstream during the initial infection in order to prevent the virus from getting in the cells. Once it's in the cells, you know, that these things will not work. Okay, well, listen, please send that in to me, and thank you very much for the phone call. And, all right, we're going to move along here. And again, I'm trying to walk a fine line here. I don't want to be screaming panic. But at the same time, this is a serious situation. The World Health Organization seems to think it's serious. Let's just do some low-key preparations, you know, just not expensive stuff, not, you know, sheet plastic over the windows or anything like that, but just some common sense stuff. We have another caller on the line, Daryl, calling from Europe. Aloha, Daryl. Welcome to the show. And I guess
hi, Michael. Long time. I haven't talked to you. How are you, my friend?
Oh, okay. How you doing? What's on your mind today?
Well, Mike, a couple of solutions for this flu. I've been talking to a Harvard-educated medicine doctor of medicine, a wonderful human being named Nancy T. Banks, M.D. She's done several broadcasts internationally about vaccines and flus and the rest. A couple of the things that stop the swelling in the lungs, which is where this hemorrhagic fever actually does its worst damage, one of the substances is curcumin or turmeric. It is actually a natural antibiotic. It has been used for thousands of years, and it actually stops the swelling that happens in the lungs. The second thing, and this happened in the 1918 flu, was a substance called cinnamon. Now, the powdered cinnamon, people who worked in a cinnamon factory never got sick during the 1918 flu, and they didn't understand why. It wasn't until later that they discovered that cinnamon has properties of anti-inflammatory, which basically when the immune system is reacting to a pathogen or a sickness.
Daryl, I need you to pause here for a second. I want you to stay on the phone, though. We're going to come back to you after this commercial break. We did talk about cinnamon earlier in the show, but I want to pick up with that when we come back from these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twisted steel was swept away, did these remaining holes reveal what really happened?
And a Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. I keep meaning to get onto the torture topic, and we're still dealing with this flu situation. The Voice of America, this is the big international news organization in the United States sending its view of the world out to everybody else, is reporting that the head of the World Health Organization says the swine flu outbreak in Mexico and the United States could develop into a pandemic. Well, we know the potential for the pandemic is there, but it's rather interesting that the World Health Organization is now considering Mexico and the United States as being the center of this outbreak now. So sort of a little Freudian slip there. We're going to go back to the phones here. Daryl, you were talking about the strange immunity of cinnamon factory workers to the 1918 flu.
Yes, I was. But before I do that, Michael, aloha kalania for everybody out in Makiki and Waikai and Aina Haina and the rest. You know, I was a longtime resident of Hawaii, and my children actually have Hawaiian blood in them. The fact is, Mike, look, the listeners probably know my name, Daryl Bradford Smith. I have to say that this stuff was not a surprise to you or me. I read your website every day, of course, and the fact is we knew that something was on the horizon here. Now, cinnamon in large doses is toxic. People have to know that. It won't work as a panacea for everything. However, the people that were working with this stuff did not fall victim to the 1918 flu. There is another substance that Dr. Banks, and again, I will reiterate that the fact that she's a Harvard-educated physician, she said vitamin C in high doses as well will also help ameliorate some of the damage. But what we've got here is a problem of inflammation. You see, when the body reacts to an outside pathogen or something that's menacing the body, it swells and it fills itself with fluid to try to disperse the injured area or the sickness. Now, that's what happens with a hemorrhagic fever. It goes all the way to the point of bursting. And the problem is if it happens in the lungs, you're drowned.
Yes.
So one of the things we need to find is ways of limiting the swelling. And that is an immune response the body has, is swelling. That's what we do. If we twist our ankle or we fall down, we get swelling. And swelling is a natural response of the body's immune system. Well, it's an immune system that goes mad. It basically is what kills us. And that's why a lot of young and seemingly healthy people in 1918 died from this flu, Michael. They fell victim because their immune system overreacted to it, and they ended up dying from that. Now,
and we're seeing that same pattern here in Mexico, where most of the deaths.
I do indeed.
Yeah.
And, you know, to bring it home a little bit, I want to bring this home a little bit. My grandmother was 8 years old when the 1918 flu outbreak happened, and she lost her parents to the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up living with her her sisters. 8 months after her parents died, both of her sisters died, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother was an orphan after that. Now, this is how serious this can become.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my family personally was absolutely devastated by the Spanish flu. And again, that's nothing to do with Spain or anything Spanish. But what we have here is we have an arsenal of natural things. There are a couple of other things that people can build their immunity up with that have been made illegal in a lot of places, but you can still get it if you do your research. Milk. And now, non-pasteurized milk has bacteria in it that are very beneficial to the immune system. And when you drink non-pasteurized milk, what you're doing is you're adding to the flour or the flour of your intestines, and what happens is that gives your immune system a strengthening. The same thing happens with things like raw eggs. The proteins that are assimilated in raw eggs are not the same things that can be assimilated in cooked eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the stuff that we can do as individuals to bolster ourselves against this are easy things. They're not expensive. They're just decisions, you see.
Yeah.
Mike, I got to tell you, if this is really the thing that's happening, and it may well be, people need to take seriously these options and these opportunities, because if they go toward the antibiotic route, what they're going to be doing is limiting their ability to fight the disease. And if they take the vaccine, they're toast, in my view. there's been enough research done by people you know as well as I do that say if you take these vaccines, by the end of it, your immune system has been weakened, not strengthened.
Well, what during the last swine flu outbreak, which actually began in Fort Dix, New Jersey, by the way, there was a vaccine program. It had to be canceled partway through because the vaccine was triggering this syndrome. I'm forgetting the name of the syndrome, but it was causing neurological damage in people.
Exactly. Well, and that may be because they have heavy metals in there. But everybody, you know, here's the interesting thing. You're living in Hawaii. You know, it's a state I love and hold dear in my heart. But across America and Europe, Michael, they're spraying the skies. Now, there was a video out recently. It ended up on a news channel where they actually tested the materials in this spray. And they came up with barium. Now, what people don't know about barium is it's radioactive. And it's always radioactive. If it weren't, it wouldn't be called barium. What happens is the barium sets up, does its dirty work in your thyroid gland because all radioactive materials end up setting up in your thyroid.
Okay,
Daryl,
I'm gonna have to bring you to a close here because we've got another caller who's been waiting on the line. And, you know, I don't want to go into this idea that chemtrails are the cause of the flu virus.
No, that's not the cause, Michael. But what it is, it's a weakening of the immune system is what it is. And what they want to do is set us up to be weakened by our environment, both pesticides, food-wise, spray-wise.
All right, Daryl, I have to let you go. Daryl, I have to let you go. The callers are piling up on this issue here, and I don't want to get into the chemtrail situation. We've got enough to worry about some homeopathic ways of dealing with this virus. So, Daryl, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to switch over to Dave in California. Aloha, Dave. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. I'm going to make it real fast because I know you want to get on to torture.
Yes.
I do have a little update on the SSRI thing. We were able to find a study that was published in July of 2008 by a gentleman named Fred Guerra, G-U-E-R-R-A, through the Violence Policy Center located in Texas. That center looked at, 554 murder-suicides over the course of 6 months in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What they found was interesting. 95% of murder-suicides were committed by men. However, when you look at the SSRI database, 29% of the murder-suicides are done by women. And women are apparently twice as likely, two to two and a half times as likely to be on SSRI. So even if you factor that in, it would appear at this time, it's still a little early, but it would appear that women are more than doubly overrepresented in the SSRI categories for murder-suicides in just that one little narrow aspect
okay,
of it.
Okay, well, so certainly
might be interested in that.
I think our socialization, there's probably a lot more pressure put on women to not be committing these kinds of crimes and these kinds of actions, and that because the whole issue with the SSRIs is that it weakens impulse control, that we're going to start seeing men and women really do have the same impulses at their core, and they're giving vent to them. Do you have any comments on the flu? Because you told our screener you had something about
the flu. Yeah, I could just say one thing real fast. It's related. I did study the... what's it called now?
Watch your language.
That was shoot.
Oh, yes, okay.
A West Nile virus. I was looking at West Nile virus back when it first broke out, and I followed it for about 3 years because it was doubling. No, it was quadrupling for like 3 or 4 years, and then suddenly it kind of eased off because it had a high mortality rate, 6%, and 40% in horses, as a matter of fact. But the interesting thing was, I was originally able to get one of the early PDFs from the CDC that showed exactly where the 2 points it was released from were, because there's a little red dot right on Fort Detrick and right on Plum Island.
Okay, then I heard the West Nile actually came from Israel, but we'll have to look at that later. Got to let you go, Dave. We've got other callers. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. The phone lines are just absolutely loaded up right now. It looks like we're going to have to put off the torture stuff until Monday, but we are going to stay on that. I promise you, we're going to be pounding that all next week. Before we get back to our callers, the Washington Post is just reporting a plan possibly to deploy the National Guard along the U.S.-Mexico border. They are saying it is to deal with the drug war issue, but I think the timing is very suspicious here regarding this possible pandemic situation. Okay, we're going to go to Brian in Georgia. Aloha, Brian. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I apologize if this is off topic from the flu and torture, but a few years ago, I had a correspondence with a gentleman. He was, World War II, Great Depression era, like my father, and he was saying that what he noticed growing up in the Great Depression was the Republicans back in that day, one reason they lost so much ground and lost influence in Washington for so long was because back then they were saying that if you were poor, if you were in a soup line or a bread line, it was your fault. And it just relating it to what's going on today, these Republican shills like Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter and George F. Will, what is it? They're saying the exact same thing today. I mean,
it's all the fault of those subprime mortgage borrowers who bought homes they couldn't afford. Yeah, I saw that the other day, and I got really, really upset about that, because when they bought the homes, they could afford them. What crashed the economy were these tax incentives by the U.S. government to these rich corporations that made it financially advantageous to take high-paying manufacturing jobs out of the U.S. and send them to foreign countries. That's what destroyed the economy. And they're trying to blame the victims here, and I'm absolutely disgusted with it, and I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
But I wonder, do these Republicans and the RNC today, do they not see they're repeating history? Do they not, or is it just this playbook they're going by? Like
They're using it as a guide. They're repeating history because this is what worked for them before, and they're just going to play the same book all out again. Anyway, we've got a lot of calls. Brian, I got to let you go. I'm sorry. Try and call back on Monday night. We'll pick this up here. And we're going to go to Tim in New Mexico. Aloha, Tim. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, two things, actually probably three. But anyway, a couple months back, I think it was like early March, there's some articles out that Baxter had released an experimental vaccine in Europe for testing that was contaminated with live bird flu.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Oh, my goodness, you're right. I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah, I'd mentioned that. So, I mean, that may be why Sweden may not be so keen on vaccination right now.
That would make a lot of sense. That would make a lot of sense. I'm still in email discussions with Thomas in Sweden. He's sending me a lot of the official information coming out of the Swedish government. We're going to put it into our Mexican flu page here. And look at that. But, yeah, I'd forgotten about that. The live flu went out there, and it was bird flu. It's the stuff that we're seeing right now, and we need to find out where...
Other strains of human flu, which is a good way to get across viral.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. We need to look at that.
And the other thing to look into would be vitamin D and flu. A lot of research. Check out the Vitamin D Council. The seasonality of vitamin or flu is largely now being attributed to vitamin D drop-off. In the winter, it builds the innate immune system.
Yeah, that's another factor. I mean, it's a very complex issue.
Right, it is.
We still don't understand how all biochemistry works, which is another reason why this genetically modified stuff is so highly risky. And now, as a side note, Monsanto is suing Germany to force them to grow genetically modified crops. Talk about the ultimate absurdity.
All that on
okay.
Your website, yeah. Anyway.
Tim, we got to let you go. We got a lot of callers. I'm trying to get to everybody before the end of the show here.
All
we're
going
to switch over to Steve. Thank you. We're going to switch to Steve in Canada. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, based on your show here, you wanted to get the torture, but I've got a new term for you. You've been swinized.
Wait a minute. I'm on a diet. I swear, I'm on a diet. I'm on a diet. Cut it out there. I'm going to turn off this webcam
here. One of your favorite terms that I think you coined was conditized.
Yes.
And I think that right now they are swinizing the public in the sense that this whole torture issue, hopefully, if they can make a big enough catastrophe here, whether it's premeditated or not, but sure is going to bury the torture issue in a hurry if this swine flu breaks out pretty big, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely, and you need to turn your radio down, please. Absolutely, it's going to be, the media will certainly use it as a distraction, and they're going to be pounding on this left and right. But here in the blogosphere, I still consider the torture issue to be paramount, but at the same time, we do have a responsibility. If there is a serious, genuine health risk to the American people, we have to spend time on that. But I am not letting this torture issue go. You know, I have got, you know, 3 hours a day of radio on this station and the other station that I do, you know, every day next week. And I will find time to keep that torture issue in front of everybody because, you know, basically it goes right to the heart of the legitimacy of the United States government. And it is because of this, because of all the things that we have seen the government do over the years, that it is considered a credible possibility that this flu outbreak is a manufactured depopulation device. I'm still very reluctant to go that way because if it's being started as a publicity device, it's going to backfire because it's already here in the United States. In fact, we just got this bulletin from San Diego County. They are now saying, if you are feeling ill, stay home and call the health department. So they're starting to put out the alerts saying for people to stay home and not collect together in the public places. So if somebody wanted to do a deliberate distraction, it would have been better to do it with something that didn't have the potential for spreading out of control. So I don't think this is related to the torture situation. It may be the beginning of a depopulation operation, which we know they've been talking about seriously since the Nixon years.
Yeah, no, I agree, but I think that the timing of it is impeccable as the torture thing becomes more and more relevant right now. There's more pressure from all angles to pursue the torture issue right now. It just seems mighty convenient that there would be another great big distraction that could, you know, be even more serious. You can take the name swinized. So.
All right, swinized. Yeah. Well, we'll use it there, but I'm going to keep the torture issue going because I think it's the worst scandal in our nation's history right now. Steve, we got to let you go. We're down to the last few minutes. We've got one caller left I want to get to. Jeff in California. Aloha, Jeff. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey there. I just had a question about two questions. Where do you see the real estate market in 10 years or so? Because I've been seeing a lot of homes around my neighborhood have been just going in foreclosure after foreclosure. Are we ever going to get back to the good home prices, or are they going to just keep going down?
There has to be a bottom someplace. What we're hearing now, and you probably heard it on the news break, the government is trying to tell us that home sales are up, and you know, but it's always revised, adjusted, and processed figures. We know for a fact that foreclosed homes are being deliberately kept off the market in order to shrink the pool of available properties and try and prop prices up that way. I don't think it's going to work in the long time. 10 years from now, boy, at this point, I'm hesitant to predict 6 months from now, let alone 10 years. But
yeah.
I would say by 10 years from now, yeah, we will have gone through the worst of this and we'll be back into a new boom time. And the world will be very, very different from what we know of it today. But as far as the current economic situation, I think we're heading for a major crisis in July or August of this year. And I think it's going to be 2-3 years before we really start to pull out of this current depression.
Would you, I have a home that is, it's almost in foreclosure. Would you suggest keeping it and waiting for the market to go around or just letting it go? Because I can get out of it without any problem at all.
Boy, you know, I hate to be the person to make those kind of choices for you because I don't know all of your circumstances. I think you need to talk to some serious professional financial advisors who are not connected with the bank that holds your mortgage. Personally, if I were in your situation, I'd want to just hang on to the home just because it's my home. And without regard to the financial ramifications, it's my home. I want to stay in it. I'll defend it with shotguns if necessary. That would be my attitude. May not be right for you. You really do have to make this choice yourself.
All right. And one
all
more.
Right? Yeah. Real quick.
How high do you think gold is going to go?
Impossible to say. I think once they're no longer able to suppress the price, it could go right through the roof here as the dollar falls. And again, I'm not the person to ask about that one, but my gut is telling me when the dollar collapses, gold is going to become incredibly valuable. All right, that's it for our show today. Thank you to everybody who called in. You always make it a much more wonderful, fascinating show when you call in with your opinions. We're going to be back Monday, 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Genesis Communication Network. We're going to keep an eye on the Mexican flu situation. We are going to go back to pounding on the torture issue. This is the worst scandal in our nation's history. I am not letting that go. Until Monday, aloha. Aloha, America.